ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா. So we welcome all devotees for another session on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 10, chapter entitled Departure of Krishna for Dwarka. So we have discussed last week how Bhishma Dev, who is one of the greatest Mahajans, leaves his body and enters into the spiritual kingdom of Goloka Vrindavan. It is described that before leaving his body, Bhishma Dev managed to convince Yudhishthira Maharaj to give up his idea of retiring from active politics and go back and take charge of all the citizens of Hastinapur who were like poor orphaned children. Yudhishthira Maharaj was convinced thoroughly after submissively hearing all the arguments put forward by Srila Bhishma Dev. Then Bhishma Dev instructed Yudhishthira Maharaj on the principles of religion, on various topics including how to protect the citizens, how to engage in proper taxation, how to protect the women, what are the principles of Varnashram, and so on and so forth. So Yudhishthira Maharaj is now completely fit to take over the charge of the kingdom of Hastinapur and rule over all the citizens. Yudhishthira Maharaj, after performing the last rites of Srila Bhishma Dev, goes back to Hastinapur and takes over the throne. So Shaunak Rishi, he is asking Srila Suta Goswami, after killing his enemies, Yudhishthira Maharaj, who did not desire to take control of the kingdom, what did he do? How did he rule his subjects? Because surely Yudhishthira Maharaj did not like this entire principle of killing others for the sake of usurping the kingdom. So did Yudhishthira Maharaj actually rule the kingdom properly? Or because he was still tainted by feelings of guilt because of his previous conditioning, he neglected such activities? So Prabhupada writes in the purport that since Yudhishthira Maharaj was fighting for the right cause, there is no question of any injustice as far as Yudhishthira Maharaj is concerned. His fighting was perfectly justified because Yudhishthira Maharaj was fighting for the sake of dharma or religion. Yudhishthira Maharaj had at various times been insulted by the Kauravas. There were attempts to destroy all the Pandavas. Yudhishthira Maharaj, along with all of his brothers, had tolerated all these insults and difficulties. Because it is described that the nature of a great devotee is that Tiraskritaha vipralabdhaha shaptaha kshiptaha taapi nasya tat pratikurvanti tad bhakta prabhavopihi. A great devotee may be insulted, tiraskritaha. He may be cheated, vipralabdhaha. He may be cursed, shaptaha. He may be neglected, kshiptaha. Or he may even be killed, khatah api. But the nature of great Vaishnavas is that in spite of being repeatedly tortured and insulted, and even after attempts to destroy and kill them have been made, they do not make any attempts to retaliate or take revenge. And although Yudhishthira Maharaj was a great Kshatriya king, within the core of his heart he was a great and compassionate Vaishnava. Yudhishthira Maharaj was highly tolerant of all these insults, and only under extreme provocation and after having been advised by Krishna personally, Yudhishthira Maharaj took charge of fighting the battle of Kurukshetra. In fact, even before Yudhishthira Maharaj had conducted the Rajasuya Yajna, he had consulted all the great sages, all the great rishis. And Yudhishthira Maharaj had consulted Lord Krishna because he thought it is the perfect opportunity to glorify Lord Krishna by the means of this Rajasuya sacrifice. Therefore, Yudhishthira Maharaj was perfectly justified in fighting this battle of Kurukshetra, and there was no need for him to feel guilty or remorseful. So it is described that Krishna appears in the material world to establish the principles of religion. Why is this material world existing in the first place? The purpose behind the material world is to give a chance to the conditioned souls who have revolted against the laws of God to reform themselves, ultimately submit to the Supreme Lord's will, purify themselves and go back home, back to Godhead. That is why this material world is existing, for our purification. Therefore, as long as there are rulers who will help to establish the laws of God, Krishna's plan is promoted. But in case there are rulers who are against Krishna's laws and Krishna's plans and are considering their subjects and kingdom simply instruments for their own sense aggrandizement, then Krishna's plan is hindered and hampered. Therefore, Krishna makes arrangements for his own devotees to take charge of various kingdoms so that ultimately the conditioned souls can be benefited. If the executive head of the state is a devotee, then he'll make sure that each and every subject in the kingdom is following Krishna's laws. And by following Krishna's laws and by surrendering to Krishna's will, by engaging in devotional service, he becomes purified and goes back home, back to Godhead. And that is the law of this material world. The law of the material world is, give a chance to every conditioned soul to become purified of anarthas and ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. In fact, even before the creation is made by Lord Brahma, who is born on the lotus flower, which sprouts from the navel of Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Brahma is completely confused about what he is supposed to do. So Garbhodakshay Vishnu, from within the core of his heart, inspires him to perform tapa or austerity. And Brahmaji engages in very severe penance. And as the mature fruit of his penance and austerity, what does Brahmaji see? The Brahmaji takes darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. That is the first result of his austerity. And what does Lord Vishnu do with Lord Brahma? What does he reveal to Lord Brahma even before guiding him and instructing him about how to create the material world? Lord Vishnu first of all gives a complete darshan of the spiritual world to Lord Brahma. Vishnu explicitly makes it very clear that the goal of your creating this material world is conditioned souls can become purified and reach this destination. Do not think that I am creating this material world or I am deputing you to create this material world simply to make the conditioned souls suffer. Krishna is not a sadist. Krishna is creating this material world to give a chance to conditioned souls to become purified and reach the spiritual world. Therefore, even before Brahma was given the task of creating material world, he was given a complete glimpse, a complete view of the spiritual world, where Brahmaji actually saw all millions and millions of eternally liberated living entities serving the Supreme Lord Vishnu in great ecstasy. He could see all of the souls in the spiritual world completely blissful, free, completely independent. They were engaged in dedicated service to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. There was no birth, no death, no old age, no disease in the spiritual world. And all of this Brahmaji could see. And Lord Vishnu indicated to Brahma, we are creating this jail. I am deputing you to create this jail, the 14 planetary systems within this one universe, so that ultimately these souls can get out of this jail and reach the spiritual world. That is the purpose of your creation. Remember that. And therefore, along with this material world also comes the Vedic instructions. Along with the material world also comes the laws which we have to follow, by which we can get out of this material world. Therefore, right from the very beginning of creation, this is the only purpose of the material world. This is the only purpose of our entire creation. This is the only purpose of our existence. So it is described, Kalena snana shauchabhyam samskare tapase jaya. How are various items purified? It is described. Kalena, by passage of time, land and other material possessions are purified. Snana, by taking bath, our body is purified. Shauchabhyam, by cleansing with water and mud, vessels are purified. Samskarai tapase jaya. Samskara, by performing proper purificatory rites, one's birth is purified. There are various rites given in the Vedic literatures, like Garbhadhan samskar, Simanta samskar, etc. By performing proper samskaras, one's birth is purified. Samskarai tapase jaya. By performing austerities, the senses are purified. Ijaya, by performing worship and by performing dana, material possessions are purified. By charity and worship of the brahmanas, one's material possessions and wealth is purified. Dravyanyatmatma shuddhaya, by satisfaction, mind is purified. And by process of self-realization, the soul is purified. In this way, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Shukadeva Goswami describes various ways by which one can become purified of the influences of the three modes of material nature. Everyone and everything in this material world is contaminated by these three modes. And the goal of our life is to become purified of the influences of these modes. And therefore, very systematically and scientifically, the Vedic literatures enunciate all the various ways by which one can become purified. Therefore, the conclusion is, purification is the goal of life. Whatever activity we may do, with mind, body or words, the ultimate goal is purification. Purification of the contaminated desire to lord it over material nature. Purification of the desire of thinking that I am Krishna. I am the enjoyer. I am the proprietor. I am the controller. Ultimately, everything is for my own personal enjoyment. This is the greatest contamination. To think that I am separate from Krishna. I can enjoy separate from Krishna. This is the contamination which is afflicting all conditioned souls. And Krishna creates the material world through the agency of Brahma so that each one of us can take to his instructions and become purified of this contamination. But then, at the level of Brahma, the creation of the material world takes place. Then further down, various planetary systems are created. But then, within each planet, there has to be a representative of Krishna who comes in the parampara of Brahma, who will still further ensure that all the souls in his kingdom are following the laws of God. And therefore, the responsibility rests on the executive head of state. And in the Vedic literatures, he is referred to as Naradeva, or the executive head who is a representative of Krishna, given charge of ruling and administering the kingdom. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ji ki, Jai Gaur Chandra ki, Irdhari Gopal ki. So at the time of Yudhishthir Maharaj was specifically put on the post of being the king or emperor of the entire planet Earth, keeping in view this plan of the Supreme Lord as far as the material creation is concerned. Unless and until the executive head is a devotee who understands the laws of Krishna, who understands the goal of human form of life, such an executive head should make all arrangements for conditioned souls to take to spiritual life seriously and ultimately go back home, back to Godhead. And because during Dwapar Yuga such a system was not existing, so-called Kshatriyas had overrun the entire planet Earth, Krishna had to personally descend and arrange for the battle of Kurukshetra. And it was as if two bamboo shoots had rubbed against each other inside a forest, and a huge forest fire had been created, which had resulted in the destruction of the entire forest. Similarly, various parties within this material world, who have a desire to lord it over material nature, come together. They are brought together by the agency of Maya, and they rub and have conflict with each other, resulting in mass destruction of various people. And ultimately, those who are surrendered to Krishna, like Yudhishthira Maharaj, are put on the post of executive head. That is Krishna's plan. As Prabhupada gives the example, that sometimes in a classroom, two children, they are too naughty, and the teacher finds it difficult to control them. So the teacher brings both these children together and tells one child, hold the other person's ears. And he tells the other child, hold the first one's ear. Both children hold each other's ears and they start pulling each other. And they continue pulling each other, and they think that I am causing pain to the other. But ultimately, both of them are causing pain to each other. Similarly, in the material world, on this planet Earth, when there is too much of influence of demoniac forces, Krishna has to intervene and establish the principles of Dharma. And that is why Yudhishthira Maharaj was so much favored by Krishna. And now, Yudhishthira Maharaj has become the king. What are his activities? How is he taking control and taking charge of the entire kingdom, which was the entire planet Earth? What was Yudhishthira Maharaj's influence? Suta Goswami is describing. Nishamya bhishmokta kathachutoktam pravritta vijnana vidhuta vibhrama shashasagamindraivajitashraya paridyupanta manujanuvartita. Yudhishthira Maharaj was a perfectly trained king because Nishamya Bhishma Uktam Katha Atha Achyutoktam. Yudhishthira Maharaj had been personally trained by two very great powerful personalities. First was Bhishma Dev, and second was the Supreme Lord Krishna himself had instructed Yudhishthira Maharaj as to how to administer the kingdom. Therefore, as far as qualifications are concerned, Yudhishthira Maharaj's qualifications and credibility are above suspicion and doubt. Secondly, pravritta vijnana vidhuta vibhrama. And because of having obtained perfect instructions from Krishna and Bhishma, all of the misgivings and doubts within the core of his heart were destroyed, and thus he was in a position to take control of the entire kingdom with full confidence, knowing that this is Krishna's will. Pravritta vijnana. Because he had achieved perfect scientific knowledge of the laws of God. And what was the area he was covering? What was the area of his kingdom? Shashasagam. The entire planet Earth was under the control of Maharaj Yudhishthira. Indra Ivajita Shreya. He was as powerful, as influential as King Indra of the heavenly planets. And it is said, not only did Yudhishthira Maharaj have control over all the land, the entire planet Earth, it is also said, Paridhyupantam Anujanuvartita. He was having control over all the seas in all the various directions. All the seas and all the lands were under his control, and he was assisted in this task by all of his brothers. Anujanu Vartita. In this way, Yudhishthira Maharaj was the perfect administrative head. Prabhupada writes in the purport that in modern times, when there is influence of democracy over most nations, it is practically impossible to imagine that there can be one leader over the entire planet Earth. Can anyone imagine? It is so difficult for a person to retain control even over a small tract of land, what to speak of entire planet Earth? Practically impossible. Even if someone has full knowledge of how to administer the entire planet, still he will not have the proper power, because by the very nature of this democracy, this system, it is impossible for anyone to execute what is within his heart. The executive head who has been elected, he may have very good motives within his heart, but because he just does not have that power, he cannot do anything. Therefore Prabhupada says that because Yudhishthira Maharaj did not have his own ideology, he did not have his own way of thinking, he had no selfish motives, and he was simply following the instructions of the previous acharyas. Therefore, he was perfectly empowered to control the entire planet. And one may wonder, if someone is given charge of taking control of the entire planet Earth, will he be in a position to rule? Will he have actual power? Will he have the proper efficiency to keep everyone satisfied and happy? Srila Prabhupada used to call this democracy demon crazy. He said, this is just a system of one demon electing another demon. Prabhupada was asked several times, what is the kind of system we should have? And he was emphatic, autocracy. Autocracy, where the person who is the administrative executive head knows exactly how to apply the principles of God consciousness. The laws of the state should not be different from the laws of God. That is the system which Yudhishthira Maharaj was following, and therefore everything was perfect. Prabhupada used to criticize the introduction of democracy in India especially, and would often give the example that one time a person went campaigning for election in the midst of a village in a remote corner of India, and he was telling the villager, please vote for my party, this is the election symbol. And the villager asked, what is the election symbol for the British? Can I vote for the Britishers also? And the politician had to explain to him, it is 30 years since the Britishers have left India. And the villager said, really? I never knew this. So Prabhupada said, this is the condition of India. How it is possible for anyone to actually execute what is there within the core of their heart through such administrative heads? Impossible. Only a very small fraction of the entire population is actually deciding who will rule the country. And because there are so many various constraints, there is no proper administration. Most of the time is simply spent bickering and fighting, trying to hold on and retain the seat. Where is there time for having constructive policies for people's betterment? It is very, very difficult. Therefore, one may wonder that to administer a small country like India is found very difficult for one person. How was it possible for Yudhishthira Maharaj to control the entire planet Earth? Was he inefficient? What kind of administration was there when he was ruling? And Srila Suta Goswami is describing what kind of opulences the people were having when Yudhishthira Maharaj was controlling the entire planet Earth as the executive head. He says, kamam vavarshya parjanya sarva kamadughamahi shishisusma vrajangava payaso dasvatir muda. Kamam vavarshya parjanya. The clouds were showering water as much as required, unlimited amounts. As and when was required, the clouds were showering water. Sarva kama dugha mahi. The earth was producing all necessities in profusion. There was no dearth of anything at all. And the cows who were grazing in the pasturing grounds, Their fatty milk bags were constantly pouring milk upon the grazing pasturing grounds, wetting these grounds with their unlimited milk. And all of these cows had a joyful attitude. This is the description of the kind of opulence which Yudhishthira Maharaj's kingdom was having. It is impossible to imagine such kind of opulence right now. So Prabhupada writes in his purport that as far as the land and cows are concerned, they are the basic principle for economic development. The laws of the land must conform with the laws of God, and if the king follows the laws of God and makes sure that all of his citizens are also following the laws of God, then in due course of time, all kinds of wonderful facilities are provided to the citizens. There is ample rainfall, and as a result of rainfall, you have ample amount of grains and vegetables and fruits. And along with this, when the influences of the rainfall, they combine with astronomical stars and influences, this results in the production of all kinds of very precious stones and jewels. This science is unknown to people right now. And most people are engaged in mining and doing all kinds of activities, simply raping Mother Earth. But the way to obtain all these minerals and jewels is simply follow the laws of God. Surrender oneself completely to following these laws, and Krishna, who has this material nature under his control, provides all facilities simply for the pleasure of all the citizens. It is described here that the cows are moistening the pasturing ground with unlimited profuse quantities of milk. Why? Because they were well protected and they were happy and joyful. Therefore, out of their own free will, they were providing this milk. And it is described that the human beings are supposed to be protecting these animals. But what is the modern scenario? The modern scenario is that people are giving up such natural living. They are engaging in opening cinema houses, slaughterhouses, prostitute houses. Prabhupada writes, what is the use of such an artificial life? Where is the question of equality and fraternity? If millions and millions of men are being sent into hellish factories and war fields at the whims of a particular man, the cows and the bulls have to be protected simply because they are providing so much of wonderful facilities for human beings to be prosperous. But what do we see now? Systematic butchering of millions and millions of cows is going on in slaughterhouses all over the world. Is this humanity? Cows are supposed to be like younger brothers. They are supposed to be like mother. Just because animals are less intelligent, do we have the right to kill them and destroy them? An executive head is supposed to protect all of his animals in the kingdom because they are also supposed to be citizens. Are animals in the kingdom not citizens of our country? If they are citizens of the country, why is the king or executive head allowing such slaughter to take place? And we are talking big, big things about equality, fraternity, non-violence. How is it possible? When Parikshit Maharaj was the king, he saw a black man trying to chastise a cow. And immediately Parikshit Maharaj was so angry, he took control of that black man, chastised him sufficiently. That is what an executive head is supposed to do. But on the contrary, we see that on a mass scale, butchering of animals is being encouraged. And this has severe karmic reactions. So Prabhupada writes, what is the use of such a democracy where a man less than an animal is simply electing another less than an animal man? This is what modern democracy is all about. Therefore, much better is the complete perfect autocratic system where Yudhishthira Maharaj was the supreme. You could not find even a single person in distress. As is described in the next verse, Nadya samudra giraya savanaspati viruda palantya oshada sarva kamam anvrtutasya vai. It is described, Nadya samudra giraya. Yudhishthir Maharaj was not only extracting taxes from the citizens, but all of the various aspects of material nature, like the rivers, the oceans, the hills and the mountains, the various plants, the creepers, the trees, the forests, everyone was supplying the respective taxes according to their quota. This is unimaginable. In every season, all of the trees were providing the proper quota to the king. Why? Because ultimately the supreme is Daiva, the supreme will. Nothing is superior to the will of the Lord. And any executive head who surrenders to the supreme will of the Lord, he pleases material nature. Material nature is controlled by Krishna. And when Mother Nature sees that the king is simply following the orders of the father, she becomes pleased. And thus, all of the various rivers, the oceans, and the trees and the plants and the creepers were supplying all of their products in great profusion. The rivers were flowing profusely, providing ample water. They were wetting all the banks and preventing them from being scorched by the heat of the sun. All of the various oceans were supplying minerals, pearls and rubies and jewels. The forests were supplying various kinds of drugs, woods and vegetables. And in this way, the seasonal changes were supplying fruits and flowers when required. Why? Simply because the executive head of the state was a devotee of Krishna. Because he was following the laws of God and he was not engaged in any sinful activities, Mother Nature saw that yes, we must supply all these things because ultimately the taxes have to be given to Krishna. Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of everything. And if the king is engaged in supplying everything as yagya, as sacrifice for Krishna, naturally, let us support and assist the king in his sacrifice to please the Supreme Lord. And thinking like this, all the products of material nature, all the various aspects of material nature, including trees, rivers, mountains, they start supplying their products in assisting the king. They provide all of these as proper taxes. Now, all over the world, there is such a great problem even to extract taxes from human beings. There is complete department, income tax department, whose whole and sole business is to somehow twist the arm of people and get their proper taxes on time. And the government has to go on announcing so many schemes so that people will somehow at least give some part of their income. And even if they are evaded taxes for many years, they will announce schemes by which somehow at least 50%, 40% of your stolen money can come back. And in spite of coaxing and cajoling all of these for years together, still it's very difficult. And in spite of so many raids on people by the income tax department, still how much of money are we able to get back from the people as taxes? And then there is another problem. The people in this department, they become corrupted and they have to have another department to keep a watch on them. And it is an endless cycle because every person is greedy and lusty and it is not possible for him to have this consciousness of assisting the Lord in his plan. But in the kingdom of Yudhishthir Maharaj, everything was so perfect, so fine that even the rivers, the trees, the oceans, every aspect of material nature was profusely supplying its products. They were paying their taxes perfectly on time. So this is the characteristic of a king who is a devotee. He manages to engage everyone in the Lord's service, including so-called inert objects which are part of material nature. Because most people do not know that Mother Nature is an expansion of the goddess of fortune. Bhu Devi is an expansion of the goddess of fortune. And when she sees that everything is being used in Krishna's service, naturally she will provide everything profusely without any problem. And not only this, Suta Goswami says, Nadayo Vyadaya Klesha Daiva Bhutatma Hetava Ajata Shatra Abhavan Jantu naam ragya karhi chit. People in the kingdom of Yudhishthira Maharaj were not suffering any kind of disease. They were having no disease. They were not afflicted by excessive heat or cold. And the three kinds of miseries which afflict conditioned souls did not have influence upon all the citizens. They were completely free from the miseries of material existence because of the influence of Yudhishthira Maharaj. Nadayo vyadayak klesha. No miseries at all. How can we understand this fact? Because Yudhishthira Maharaj was such a great devotee, every aspect of material nature was arranged and designed to provide pleasure to every citizen. Because Yudhishthira Maharaj himself was following and making sure that the citizens are following, therefore everyone was pleased and happy and blissful. Yudhishthira Maharaj was pious, obedient, and he was willing to surrender to the Lord's will, and therefore there was no problem of any kind. We cannot imagine a land where there is no disease, no anxiety, no mental agony, no kind of any disease of any kind, physical or mental. Can anyone imagine this? Impossible to believe. But this is what was the condition in Yudhishthira Maharaj's kingdom. It was perfect. But now, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, we are seeing that on all sides, people are suffering. In spite of so-called technological advancement, people are suffering. Why? What is the reason? The reason is cows are being slaughtered. Animals are being killed in large numbers. People are not taking care to protect the environment, thinking that this is for our own enjoyment, for sense gratification. And because of this, material nature is reacting in a severe way. None of us can hope to be happy in such an environment and circumstance. It is impossible. But if a person is simply serving Krishna, simply by the pleasure of Krishna, all products are arranged in such a fashion that all the citizens can be satisfied. It is described that the meat and the slaughtering industry is creating so many problems which people are not aware of. India is supposed to be the land of dharma, but India has now become one of the largest exporters of beef in the world. It's a shame for all of us, but this is a fact. Let us see some of the various kinds of atrocities which man is committing towards innocent animals all over the world and on environment in general, which is ultimately resulting in mass destruction. We are all sitting on a hot cauldron of fire and we are being slowly but surely choked to death, but we are blissfully unaware of what is going on around us, thinking that our condition is safe. There is something called individual karma and there is something called collective karma, and we have to pay. Each and every person has to pay for this collective karma. I may be pious, I may be simple, I may be following the laws of God, but if the majority of the population is breaking the laws of God, slaughtering animals, we also have to pay a price. So it is said that as far as the forests are concerned, half of the rainforests all over the world have been destroyed because land has to be cleared for cattle to graze so that they can become fat, and the fatter they become, the more meat they can provide. Forest destruction is directly a result of this industry, meat packing industry as they call in the US. As far as agriculture efficiency is concerned, it is described that half of the world's grains are used simply for feeding animals so that ultimately they can be slaughtered and eaten in the form of meat. But it is so inefficient that it takes 16 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of beef. But people are so addicted to eating meat that even at the cost of millions of people going hungry for the lack of grains, this is going on. Can you imagine? 16 pounds of grains are required so that 1 pound of beef can be produced. How much inefficient. But because people are addicted, they simply will not see this logic. Although this is known to everyone, but still it is described that 1.3 billion people all over the world can be fed more if simply all the non-vegetarians take to vegetarianism. They stop killing animals. 1.3 billion people all over the world, more can be fed simply by stopping to eating meat. That is the problem with meat eating. It is highly inefficient. And on top of it, it creates air pollution, because most of the land is cleared by burning the forests, and all of this creates pollution. And on top of it, they also give the logic, we are killing cows because when the cow belches, it produces methane. And this methane, it is highly toxic. It results in destruction of the ultraviolet rays. It results in the destruction of so many proper gases, results in greenhouse effect. And because all of these cows are producing this methane, better kill the cows, destroy the cows. But actually that is not a fact. Most of this methane is released by the cows who are overfed by livestock owners, so that ultimately they can be used for slaughtering. And those cows who are allowed to graze on the fields, especially in India, most of the cows are not meant for slaughter, and they are taken care of properly. In such cases, the release of methane is not so much, not so high. And in total, only 2% of the total belching of the cows results in addition to the methane layer, as far as the greenhouse effect is concerned. Therefore, it is faulty logic. And water pollution, 50% of water pollution in US is linked to livestock, to this meat packing industry. So in short, we can conclude that all of these various aspects put together, it creates such a horrible environment on all sides that everyone who is living on this planet Earth has to pay a price. So if somehow or the other we are able to convince the population to stop eating meat, one can prevent soil erosion, one can prevent forest deforestation, desertification. All of these are a direct consequence of meat eating. But people do not realize this, and therefore they are engaged in massive slaughter of cows. And slaughtering of cows has severe karmic consequences also. It is said that a person who slaughters a cow has to take as many births as cow as there are hairs on the body, and be slaughtered again and again and again. So, the amazing thing is, even in a land like India, people are losing vision about these facts and engaging in rampant slaughter of animals. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is description of various hells where a person is sent if he slaughters animals, if he slaughters cows. Therefore, one has to be extremely careful about this. Also, it is described, even from the point of view of health, when you eat directly grains, the kind of proteins and carbohydrates and other vitamins and fibers you get, once these grains are given to the animals, 100% of the fiber is lost. 90% of the carbohydrates is lost. 99% of the proteins is lost. And it comes in a different form, which is extremely toxic. Therefore, one has to use his intelligence to understand. Should one eat simple wheat grains products, which have been provided by Krishna directly, or one has to engage in eating meat, which is creating so many problems individually and collectively? Unless this consciousness is developed within each and every member of the human society, all of us have to pay a price for it. Because Mother Nature is going to severely have a backlash upon us. We have to pay a price for this. Therefore, the onus is on the executive head to stop this kind of rampant slaughter. But the problem is, most of the executive heads in the history of United States have been ranch owners. There was a president, Lyndon Johnson, and he was one of the biggest cattle ranch owners. And millions of cows were being butchered every day. And ultimately, the whole country of the United States had to pay a price in the form of the Vietnam slaughter. Thousands and thousands of innocent American boys were slaughtered in the battlefields, in the killing fields of Vietnam. And this was a direct consequence of the executive head engaging in sinful activities. Therefore, one has to be very careful about what kind of policies one is following. Otherwise, everyone has to pay a price. In the initial charter, there were the various purposes of ISKCON, and Prabhupada made this very clear. One of the purposes of ISKCON is to bring members closer together for the purpose of leading a simpler, more natural way of life. This is amongst one of the seven purposes of ISKCON which Prabhupada has stated in 1966 while establishing this society. It is one of our duties to bring people close to a simpler, more natural way of life in terms of their living, in terms of their diet, in terms of their whole outlook towards what the goal of life is. And we have to specially make sure that we take this problem across to the people. We preach to the people about the ill effects of meat eating. If anyone has ever visited a slaughterhouse, there are chances that he might give up meat eating. And there have been hundreds and thousands of cases where a meat eater has visited a slaughterhouse and has actually seen with his own eyes how a cow is being slaughtered. And after hearing the shrieks of the poor innocent animal at the time of slaughter, he simply cannot eat this anymore. There was an instance where a bison, a type of bull, was being slaughtered in England. And generally, the preaching was that animals don't have soul, therefore we can kill him. When this bull was being slaughtered, he started falling down upon his knees in front of the butcher. And there were tears in his eyes. And he was crying and shrieking, it appeared. He was pleading with the butcher, "Please don't kill me. Please don't destroy me. Please leave me. Spare me." And when the butcher saw this, he was completely confused. He didn't know what to do because he had never seen such an experience before. Of a cow, of a bull, who was falling down upon his knees just like an ordinary human being might plead for his life when threatened with his life. And the butcher went out and called other butchers. And all of them saw there were profuse tears flowing from the eyes of this bull. And he was pleading and begging, "Please, leave me, leave me. Have mercy upon me." And when the butchers, all of them, saw this, none of them had the heart to cut him. And they realized that after all, we were thinking that these animals don't have soul. They don't have feelings. We can deal with them any way we want. That doesn't seem to be all right. There seems to be some problem in this theory somewhere. And because they saw such an experience, they could not cut that bull. And all of them renounced the life of being a butcher and took to a different profession. Because this was the impact. So we should understand that all the animals have life, all the animals have soul. Prabhupada used to say, today you are preaching, animals don't have soul, because you want to kill them and destroy them for your own sense gratification. Tomorrow you will come up with a theory that old men don't have soul. Because you don't like old men, you will start describing this theory, old men don't have soul, therefore we are taking care of them. We are eliminating them. Or tomorrow you may say, already the theory is that within the womb the child doesn't have soul, so there is rampant abortion going on. So anything which is not convenient, you will start producing some theory to suit sense gratification and go ahead with it. That is not acceptable. Therefore, one has to raise his voice against animal slaughter, especially cow slaughter, which is the greatest possible sin. Especially those who are born in India and who are aware of Krishna conscious philosophy should not sit tight. With all of our efforts, we should try to preach against meat eating, against cow slaughter. It is the greatest sin. We are killing our own mother. What kind of gratefulness do we have? We are drinking milk of our mother and killing our own mother? Prabhupada used to be extremely heavy against this. And there is this myth of overpopulation, and the population of the world is increasing. Therefore, at least from our side, let us decrease the population of animals. That is our service to society. That is also an argument given. But what kind of overpopulation? The population of the entire planet Earth is only 6 billion. And it is said that if you simply take the 21 square lakhs of the country of France, you can bring each and every person of the entire planet Earth within that 21 square lakhs of France, and each person will have around 975 square miles for himself. There is absolutely no problem. 975 square feet for himself. There is no overpopulation. Prabhupada said, it is a myth. Krishna is saying, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate. Everything is perfect. I am perfect and all emanations coming from me is perfect. And you are saying that there is overpopulation. That means Krishna is imperfect. Impossible. And there are so many various kinds of problems which have come about because of industry. All of us know. Air pollution, water pollution, toxic waste, toxic trade. Millions and millions of tons of nuclear wastes are being thrown in the oceans. Millions of tons are being buried under the earth, which may take more than 2.5 lakhs to leave their poisonous effects. 2.5 lakh years to leave their poisonous effects. We are completely oblivious of this. Most of the industrialists, although they are perfectly aware of the ill effects all these toxins have, still, simply to make some money, they are willing to compromise with the precious lives of people on this earth. And all the water of the rivers is being destroyed and polluted. The air is being polluted so much. We are taking in only 2 quarts of water every day. But every day we are taking in at least 15 to 20 times more as far as air is concerned. And those who are residing in Mumbai, the air is so polluted. It is as good as smoking 20 cigarettes. So polluted is the air. In such a scenario, how can we expect people to be happy and peaceful? How can we expect any government to come and restore some semblance of peace and happiness in society? This is impossible. We are living in a fool's paradise, Prabhupada says. Therefore, cow protection has to be one of the greatest priorities for any executive head of state, and only then Krishna will bestow His mercy on human society. It is described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna specially loves the cows. Many times people would ask Srila Prabhupada, why are you emphasizing so much cow protection? Prabhupada's answer was simple. Because Krishna loves the cows, so we love the cows. If Krishna says, I love the dog, we love the dog. But Krishna is saying, we love the cows. I love the cow. He is Gopal. Therefore, we are talking about protecting cows. So it is said, that when Krishna was born, as soon as he was born, Vasudeva within his mind donated 10,000 cows to the Brahmanas. And then when Krishna's birth ceremony was being conducted, after Krishna's Abhishek was over, Nanda Maharaj, the Brajavasis, all of them started decorating the cows. It is described in the 10th canto. Gavo vrasha vatsatara haridra tailabhushita vichitra dhatu barhasra vastra kanchana malina. All of the cows were smeared with turmeric mixed with oil. They were massaged with great love. Vichitra dhatu barhasra. They were smeared with various kinds of colored minerals. Their heads were decorated with peacock feathers, vastra, kanchana, malina. And they were decorated with clothes and ornaments made of gold. Their horns were tipped with gold. Their hooves were covered with gold. Can anyone imagine such kind of prosperity and opulence? But that was the kind of affection which the Brajavasis had for the cow. Prabhupada writes, can hardly imagine cows with such golden ornaments and clothes. In Kali Yuga, even human beings do not usually wear these things. That is the result of our advanced civilization, that gold is being repeatedly being replaced with plastic, and real jewels are being replaced with artificial jewels. In fact, most people are even afraid to wear real jewelry. Even in ISKCON temples, Prabhupada has given instruction, only artificial jewelry. No real gold, no real jewelry. Why? Because we will invite thieves and rogues. Therefore, as Kali Yuga progresses, such opulence cannot be even imagined. And it is said that all the Brajavasis who were going to see Krishna, they were all wearing wonderful golden necklaces, golden turbans. All of their clothes were having embroidery of gold, and they were carrying plates filled with all kinds of precious jewels, golden coins. And Prabhupada writes, simply by taking care of cows, all the residents of Vrindavan were so prosperous. Simply by doing cow protection, they were so prosperous. And compare that with a typical villager now in the country of India. Usually he is seen wearing niggardly clothes. Nobody wants to be a villager. Nobody wants to be a farmer in the age of Kali. As Kali Yuga progresses, most people want to give up farming. But here, in the land of Vrindavan, all of the farmers were so opulently decorated. Even the greatest millionaire in Kali Yuga cannot imagine. And then they started celebrating Krishna's birth in so many wonderful ways. It is said, Gopaha parasparam vishta dadikshiradritambubi asi chanto vilimpanto navanitai stachikshipu. To celebrate Krishna's birth, all of the cowherd men and women were in so much of ecstasy that they started throwing on each other milk, condensed milk, curd, ghee in water, and they started smearing each other's faces with fresh butter. In Kali Yuga, people will have a heart attack if they hear this. What is going on in Vrindavan? Prabhupada writes in the purport that the cowherd men in Vrindavan, simply by taking care of cows, were having so much in abundance that not only they were making foodstuffs cooked in pure ghee, not only were they having profuse quantities of curd and butter in their houses, they had so much of surplus that they could afford to throw these things as part of a festival. It was like a holy festival, but what kind of holy people celebrate? Nowadays people celebrate holy, they don't even have proper colors. Usually they throw some turpentine or so many other chemicals. But here they were playing with pure cow products, which were available in such profuse quantities, we can't even imagine. Asi chanto vilimpanto. Their sprinklers were filled with ghee and water, and they were smearing on each other various kinds of butter, which was mixed with various colors. That was their play. And Prabhupada says, do not think this is a myth, but this is a result of protecting cows. When the cows are protected, all human society will prosper like anything. So it is said that Krishna's first priority, Namo Brahmanna Devaya Go Brahman Hitaya Cha Jagad Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Nama. So when Garga Muni was giving the name for Krishna, he made a prediction. Anena Sarva Durgani Yoyam Anjastarishyate Eshavasreya Adasyat Gopa Gokulanandana. Krishna's first duty is not protecting Brahmanas. Krishna's first duty is protecting cows. Krishna loves the cows so much that his first priority is providing all facilities so that the cows can be satisfied and peaceful. And when Krishna was attacked by Putana, and ultimately Krishna killed Putana, all the cowherd women, the gopis, they came and brought Krishna down from the breast of Putana. And they were so much afraid that something must have happened to Krishna, they started performing all kinds of rituals to protect Krishna. And all of this was based on the cow. First, they took the tail. The end of the tail of the cow is called a switch. And with the switch, they started circumambulating Krishna. They were fanning Krishna with this switch, by which all the inauspicious elements were being removed. Then Krishna was bathed in cow urine. And then they started applying the dust which was raised by the hooves of the cows on Krishna's body and smeared Krishna's body with that dust. And then finally they applied tilak on 12 places with cow dung. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, he applied tilak on all parts of his body with cow dung. Therefore, for Krishna, the cows are extremely dear. When they were of 5 years of age, Nanda Maharaj gave Krishna and Balram charge of cows and calves, small calves. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, this is Vedic civilization. Brahmana means literary academic education. Kshatriya means warfare and politics. Small children should be trained only in that field. And Vaishya means they are trained in commerce, agriculture and crop protection. Otherwise, nowadays in Kali Yuga, people are simply engaged in wasting time going to school to be falsely educated and later increasing the number of unemployed. Everyone is engaged only in academic education. But the Varnashram system was, Vaishya means he'll be trained for cow protection and farming. This was the perfect system. And Krishna with his flute represented cow protection, and Balram with his plow was representing farming and agriculture. In this way, they had the perfect combination. And Krishna, the Supreme Lord, who takes care of the entire creation, was taking care of the calves as a young cowherd boy. Therefore, if one wants to replicate the conditions which were there in Vrindavan, one has to take care of the cows. In fact, Indra ordered the Samvartak cloud to go and shower rains on Vrindavan, and he gave a specific order, destroy all the animals of Vrindavan, because they are the cause of the prosperity of the Vrajavasis, because of which they have become maddened with wealth. In this way, we can understand that protection of cows is so important that simply by doing this one activity, everyone can be satisfied. And because Yudhishthira Maharaj was such a perfect king, in his kingdom, the cows were wetting the pasturing grounds with profuse quantities of milk. Therefore, as residents of this great land of Bharatvarsh, it is our first and foremost duty to try our level best within our own capacity to somehow serve the ultimate embodiment of all wonderful pleasure, that is cow. Prabhupada says, cow is the best animal because all of its products are useful. And it is said that the milk is miracle food for the brain, for understanding spiritual knowledge. And Prabhupada highly recommended to all of his disciples. Therefore, Yudhishthira Maharaj was taking charge of the entire kingdom as a perfect administrative head. And because he had taken complete charge on behalf of Krishna, everyone was satisfied, everyone was peaceful, there was no problem at all. Therefore, following in the footsteps of Yudhishthira Maharaj, it is a duty of every executive head to simply follow the laws of the Lord. And unless such a thing is followed, peace and prosperity is impossible. It is described that one time there was a king, and that king made a law. Whatever anyone would speak, before speaking he should laugh loudly, and only then he should speak. So if one person comes and meets someone, first of all he should laugh. Ha ha ha, what is your name? So the other person will say, ha ha ha, my name is so and so. This was the law. Anyone goes to the market, ha ha, do you have rice? Ha ha, yes I have. Ha ha, what is the rate? Ha ha, 20 rupees a kilo. Ha ha, too much. Ha ha, get lost. This was the law. Everyone was puzzled, but the king said, laughing is good for health, this is the law. So what happened was, one day, the king's son went to the forest and an animal ate him up, he died. The minister came and said, ha ha ha, king, your son is dead. Ha ha ha. The king was so angry, he took his sword, was about to destroy him. Minister said, this is your law only. Whatever is said, it should be done with a laugh. King said, okay, from today law is changed. Whatever you speak, first you should cry. And then you should cry. So everyone was crying and then speaking. After some days, the king gave birth to a child. The minister said, queen has given birth to a child. King said, what the hell? What is the problem with that? Why are you crying? It is good news. I'll kill you. Minister said, my dear king, it is your law only. So the king said, okay, forget it. I will stop making my own laws, using my own brain. Let us follow the laws of God. So Yudhishthira Maharaj was following the laws of God. And because of this, everyone was peaceful, happy and satisfied. Therefore, let us simply try to aspire to follow in the footsteps of great souls in Yudhishthira Maharaj and make our life perfect. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions?
Hare Krishna?
Yes.
Yes, Prabhuji. In your lecture you said that by doing austerities, you can control your senses.
Yes.
So what kind of austerities and how do we control our senses?
In the Upadeshamrita, it is described, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jihva Vegam, Udaropastha Vegam. These are the preliminary austerities one has to perform. One has to try to control the urge to speak, vacho vegam, urges of the mind, manasa, urges of anger, krodha, urges of the tongue, belly and genitals. Out of all the senses, the most difficult is the tongue. So if one has controlled the tongue in terms of eating and speaking, automatically all the other senses come under control. Therefore one has to take special precautions to first control the tongue. It is described, Atah Sri Krishna Namadi na bhavet grahyam indriyai sevon mukhaihi jihva adau. In the very beginning, control of the tongue is essential to be able to understand and realize Krishna. Therefore we are emphasizing no meat eating. Only vegetarian foodstuffs which are cooked with devotion and offered to the Lord. So Prabhupada says that unless one takes to Krishna Prasad, progress in bhakti is very difficult. And that is one aspect of Krishna consciousness which is very easy to appreciate also, even at the very initial stages. Who is there who does not relish Krishna Prasad? Philosophy of Bhagavad Gita takes many years to understand. But to understand that Krishna Prasad is delicious takes only once. In just one session you will be able to understand the potency of Prasad. And after having Prasad for many, many months, slowly purification takes place. Intelligence is purified, then one is able to understand philosophy. Because when there is meat in the stomach, liquor in the brain and smoke in the mouth, how you can understand Bhagavad Gita? Impossible. So first you have to stop smoking, stop drinking, stop eating meat, then start taking purified foodstuffs without onion and garlic, stop eating tobacco, no tea, no coffee. It is a big challenge in India. Tea and coffee is like something which people can't do without. People become shocked when they hear no tea and no coffee. But it is not basically of Indian origin. It was imported from abroad. And all over, people have become addicted. In a climate like England, we can understand. But in India, it's so hot. But still people are so addicted to this. But tea and coffee is something which is not allowed as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned. If one becomes a slave of all of these habits of the tongue, then one cannot become servant of Krishna. So Prabhupada told his disciple, he had instructed one disciple to make a murti, a deity of Lord Jagannath. And Prabhupada went to see, in the initial days of ISKCON, how the progress is. And when he went there, he saw that there were some cigarette butts also. He was a sculptor making deity of Jagannath, but for inspiration he was also smoking some cigarettes. So Prabhupada went and he saw that. And he said, "You are so sincere, you are so devoted trying to serve, why are you allowing one cigarette to come between you and Krishna? Why are you allowing one cup of tea to come between you and eternal life in the spiritual world?" There is no description anywhere of Krishna or any of the Vrajavasis drinking tea. It is completely a concoction and it is an intoxicant by any standard. Therefore, control of the tongue is very important. And for those who are addicted to meat eating, sometimes it becomes difficult to give up meat eating. Prabhupada said, "No problem, we still have remedy. We have paneer, you fry paneer and you serve. It tastes like meat only. And someone who is addicted to fish, you take brinjal, bangan, fry it and you give it. It appears like fish, so he can be thinking that I am eating fish only, I am eating meat only. Still it is Krishna Prasad only. If someone is so addicted that he can't give it up, these are the ways Prabhupada recommended. And if someone is addicted to wine, Prabhupada went to the extreme of saying, before drinking, offer within the mind, 'My dear Lord, the taste of this wine is you.' And saying like that, drink. Very soon Krishna will take away that urge." Therefore, control of the tongue is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Whatever goes in should be Krishna Prasad. Whatever comes out should be Krishna Kirtan, Krishna Katha. In this way, the tongue is controlled. And when the tongue is controlled, Semon Mukhai Jihvadav Swayam Eva Swaratyada. From within the heart, Krishna reveals himself. So Prabhupada spent most of his time cooking Prasad in initial days. He was not giving discourses on the 10th canto. He was not discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. Most of the time he spent cooking for all those hippies. Because he knew, if somehow I have to distract them from all those intoxicants, then this is the only way. And in fact, the first marriage ceremony Prabhupada conducted, he cooked a 16 or 17 course feast himself. And then so many of the friends of the bride and the bridegroom had come. And because of the influence of the hippie culture, they were following so many various kinds of diets, like macrobiotic diet and all. Not having any ghee, not having much fatty things, not having any fried items. So Prabhupada had made all kachoris, samosas, gulab jamun, so many wonderful varieties. And they said, no, we have not had this kind of food in months. This is not allowed. This is not good for the heart, too much cholesterol, this and that. So one of that group one of the people of that group, he decided, enough of it, I will try something. And he tried some of the items Prabhupada had cooked, and he loved it so much, he just attacked. And all the others were somehow trying to resist themselves. When they saw this fellow breaking all the rules of macrobiotic dieting and eating sumptuous Krishna prasad, they also said, to hell with that dieting. And they also started. And one of the people, one of the members, he tasted Prabhupada's kachori. And as soon as he touched Prabhupada's kachori upon his tongue, he took a vow, I will never leave this person who has cooked such a fantastic kachori. And at that spot he dedicated his life to ISKCON, simply by tasting Prabhupada's cooking. So, Krishna Prasad is very powerful, Krishna Kirtan is very powerful, so the tongue has to be engaged. And once the tongue is engaged, all the other senses will follow suit automatically. Okay? Yes. No, he had a question. So therefore we have food for life department in our temple, where devotees are going out 3 days a week distributing Krishna Prasad to so many who are hungry on the streets. You know? In Babulnath, in Grand Road, so many places, devotees go and they are distributing prasad to those who are not only hungry as far as their stomach is concerned, but also spiritually hungry. Even the soul is affected by this. Yes.
Prabhuji, what is the special qualification Arjuna had? What I mean to say is, even Dharmaraj was also a devotee of Krishna, and he was also fully surrendered and as intelligent as Arjuna was. Why Krishna taught Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna?
Okay, why Krishna taught Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna and not Yudhishthir is your question. Well, why Krishna likes only cows and not dogs and hogs and not horses? Why only cows? Why so special? Krishna can do anything, is it not? So, first of all, Krishna can choose anyone as his instrument to display his wonderful transcendental qualities. So first of all, Krishna decided that I have to choose someone who is 100% surrendered. 100%. Krishna explains to Arjuna, Bhaktosi me sakhacha iti rahasyam hi etad uttamam. Because my dear Arjuna, you are my devotee and friend, I am giving this knowledge to you. Why? Because Arjuna was totally surrendered to Krishna in all respects. Whereas, as far as others are concerned, sometimes they were not so surrendered. Like Yudhishthir, during the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna had given a straight instruction. Just speak, Ashwatthama is dead. But Yudhishthir started thinking, what will happen to my reputation? What will people think? What will people say? How can I say this? It is not correct. So he had to actually speak it straight without even consulting or considering anything or anyone. The father of dharma personified, Krishna is telling him, speak out, Ashwatthama hata. But then Yudhishthir was considering, no, this is a lie. And I have never ever spoken a lie in my life before. He had no conception of what a lie is, and so he was hesitating. So he said, Ashwatthama hata narova kunjarova. Or elephant, the elephant Ashwatthama, or the man Ashwatthama. So of course when he said that, Krishna blew the conch shell. So nobody could hear that. At least Dronacharya could not hear that. But then this shows that Krishna was perfectly justified. And of course, there were so many devotees and there were so many saints and sages in the Himalayas who might have been great devotees of Krishna, but Krishna specifically chooses some as his very dearmost servants. And Krishna put Arjuna in that position. Prabhupada gives the example that when a mother-in-law wants to chastise the daughter-in-law, because the relationship is not close, she chastises via the daughter. So the mother-in-law catches hold of her own daughter and says, "Why did you cook like this? Horrible. No salt in the food." And the daughter says, "I did not cook. It is not my fault." Said, no, it is horrible." So the daughter-in-law is overhearing. So she understands, okay, mother-in-law is not happy with this. So Prabhupada says, when Krishna wants to tell us some message, he can't directly chastise us. If Krishna comes and tells, "You are a fool. You are a fool number one," then we'll take offense. So Krishna catches hold of Arjuna and says, "Arjuna, you are fool number one." And we are hearing the lecture and feeling, yes, no problem. Arjuna is fool number one. That's all right. That's okay. Krishna is speaking such nice words. But if Krishna had directed the whole thing upon us, we would have a tough time digesting it. So Krishna uses his own devotees in so many ways to demonstrate to us so many things. Indra lifts the Govardhan and Krishna chastises Indra heavily. And we are hearing the entire pastime and seeing how Indra's pride is being crushed. And we are thinking, yes, exciting, great. But actually, all of us are also having a mountain of false pride within our heart. And only Krishna can lift that up. So when we get the message, which is called parokshavad, not direct, but indirect, through a story, through a pastime, then, on one hand, our false ego is not smashed directly. At the same time, by hearing the pastime and the message which comes through that pastime, we are provoked to think deeply about in which direction my life is going. And you are provoked to change yourself. If you are actually thinking within the core of your heart. Therefore, Krishna has manifested so many wonderful pastimes to give message and lessons to the conditioned soul. And for Bhagavad Gita, he chooses Arjuna specifically. Otherwise, why he should choose Arjuna? He is a pure devotee. Why Arjuna should lament the way he is lamenting in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita? It doesn't make sense at all. Arjuna is the greatest devotee. He is part of Nara Narayan. Why he is lamenting like this? He is representing our lamentation. He has taken up that role. Krishna is enacting that drama. When a director wants to put up a perfect play, whom will he choose? His best actor or a newcomer who has just come in? When he wants to put up a play, he will usually rely on the best actor whom he has personally trained for years. Right? To put up a memorable performance which people will remember for many, many years. Therefore, Krishna chooses Arjuna. Very good, Arjuna. You should come here. Because if Arjuna forgets to lament, what will happen? Gita cannot be spoken. And it is not that Krishna had to prepare, "Tomorrow I have to speak the Gita." And he was sitting and preparing notes, how I should speak, what I should speak. Krishna was demonstrating his supreme opulence of his intelligence. He was just speaking offhand, one after the other. And they are eternally recorded for posterity. Because Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So he is choosing Arjuna in this fashion. So when Prabhupada was preaching in the West, he made it very clear to all of his disciples that don't think that Arjuna was an illusion. We are in illusion. And we are simply trying to learn from the mistakes of Arjuna. Arjuna is representing a conditioned soul. That is the main point. Okay? So, too many... I think we can discuss in private. Something very urgent? Okay.
This is 5000... Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, this is only 5000 years old story of Arjuna being told Gita by Lord Krishna. But what about lakhs of years ago, Surya Devata and then Vivaswan and...
So, that is what? Krishna can choose anyone to be a recipient.
What was the provocation for?
What was the?
Provocation for telling Gita to Lord Surya.
Provocation? Gita doesn't require a provocation to actually be spoken. Gita is describing the laws of God and what a human being should do to actually apply those laws in his own life. The reason why Arjuna was chosen was Sa Kalene Mahata Yogo Nashtaparantava. This knowledge, which was supposed to be eternally existing, was lost in due course of time. And as an emergency measure, it had to be reinstated. And that was done through the agency of Arjuna. Otherwise, Imam Vivasvate Yogam, at the very beginning of creation, I was spoken, many millions of years back, I was spoken this knowledge, Krishna says, to Vivaswan. And Vivaswan has spoken to Manu, and Manu has spoken to Ikshvaku. So it is coming in disciplic succession, and so Arjuna had to be retold this Bhagavad Gita, because it was lost in due course of time. And Prabhupada compares that with the scenario in 1966, when the pure knowledge of Bhagavad Gita was lost. And people were confused, what is Bhagavad Gita? Because most commentators, they use the heading Bhagavad Gita to actually speak out their own Gita. So Prabhupada was very much critical of this. Why don't you title it My Gita? Title it by your name. Why are you giving Bhagavad Gita? Because it is not commercially viable. If someone says, this is my book, who is going to buy? Say, this is Bhagavad Gita. This is Krishna's Bhagavad Gita. Everyone will buy it. But inside, you are packaging your own ideas, which is very sinful. Therefore, Prabhupada said that this Bhagavad Gita, as it is, this will actually dispel all the doubts of people. And the proof of the pudding is in the eating. The first Bhagavad Gita was available in the West in English language in 1850. But till 1966, how many devotees were made in the West? How many people took to active Krishna consciousness, dedicating their lives? No one. Hardly anyone. So Prabhupada said, proof of the pudding, proof of a medicine is in its efficacy. What kind of change it has in people's life. And just see, now this one Bhagavad Gita has sold maximum number of copies than any other book in history. All over the world. There are devotees for distributing Bhagavad Gita. From Iceland they are going to Greenland to distribute Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Can you imagine? I was preaching in Yerawada jail one time, and there were some prisoners who were convicted for life imprisonment, and they were translating Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita into Braille language for the blind. It is amazing that this one Bhagavad Gita is ever fresh, eternal. Therefore, just as Arjuna was chosen to represent the real knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada has presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. As it is means without any change. So you are standing and sitting in front of me and you say, bring me some water. And I tell you, it is not he who is saying, some inborn, unborn, unknown entity within who is asking for that water. So forget it. You will be insulted. You are coming in your best clothes. You have just stitched the best clothes for Diwali and you are coming and saying, how do I look? And I say, you are formless. You are formless. I can only see a light, nothing else. What will be your response? What kind of a fool are you? I have just looked into the mirror and I am looking so good and I am coming in front of you and you are saying, I can only see light, nothing else. So Krishna is standing with all of his resplendent beauty in front of Arjuna and speaking Bhagavad Gita. And there are commentators who are saying, no, it is just light. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Can light speak? Is it possible? Just the fact that it is Uvacha, spoken, means it has to be a person with some senses. Therefore, you should take shelter of Bhagavad Gita as it is and make your life perfect. Then you will understand. First chapter is very important. Most people don't read the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, thinking that it is simply a list of names. No, it is most important, and only by studying first chapter, the mood will be set for future chapters. Okay? Thank you very much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanande.